This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is Cruise Control with me, Arif Roos, who's anchoring the show again this week. And as usual, I'm joined in the studio by
Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my because Richard Bradbury is not here.
Apparently he's not feeling well today.
Is that really the reason?
Old man, old dishes.
I think he's going to see a movie. But never mind. He's probably going to see the movie Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah. There's an excellent film coming out very soon.
As
usual, we have quite a packed show today. Starting out with the news, which is right in this part. And then following that, in part two, we have a review of a car. And then part three, I have an interview with George Biggs, the managing director of Asia Pacific at McLaren Automotive.
Well done. Going our market, are we?
Yeah. Kind of fell out of place, but I suppose that's what it is now.
You're never out of place because you're in the demographic that can serve and purchase a McLaren.
Wow. Anyway, let's do the news.
Yes.
Right, news is pretty light these coming days and weeks at the end of the year, So the first piece of news that we got has to do with Touch and Go again, and it's the fact that they've decided to end extra surcharges if you use your Touch and Go in parking lots. Okay. But they will end it in stages, so which is good. Though, if you want to top up your Touch and Go card somewhere, some places still charge 50 cents. So, that's still not a bright spark considering that you are actually still paying to use the service. Right? A lot of people complain about this. And then the Deputy Domestic Trade and Consumer Affairs Minister, Chong Chen Jen, points out that there are still 2,880 of 11,200 locations that don't impose top-up surcharges. So that's not very many.
True. But you see, the thing is, I actually called someone in Touch and Go. I wanted to get some insight on this.
Yeah.
And apparently for the parking charges in the malls, Touch and Go doesn't make that extra money.
No, they don't.
It's the parking operator or the mall or the business operator of that car park that charges that money. And they actually told me this, and I didn't think about it, because I'm a feeble-minded person. Actually, they shouldn't be charging. In fact, they should give a discount. Why? Because there is no cost in moving money.
That is true. And, if you pay using a ticket, you have to go to the auto pay machine.
Exactly.
You have to have parking management and all that stuff.
You have to manufacture the ticket.
Yeah.
It's paper cost or whatever else. And then you got the meter to run it. And then you got the money to move it, calculate this, that, everything else. When they use Touch and Go, they're actually saving a lot of internal management costs.
Exactly. So I guess we will start cheering when they give us 10% discount on Touch and Go.
Yeah. So a lot of people were giving Touch and Go a hard time about this, but actually it's not Touch and Go that's making the money.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've clarified that.
Yep. Next story. Carpooling isn't for Malaysians. Do you have any thoughts about carpooling before?
I'm not going to let a stranger in my car.
No, definitely not.
The thing is, Malaysians are not into that. That's why we don't have a hitchhiking society here. You've never seen people hitchhiking, right? But even if you do you actually stop and give them a lift?
I wouldn't.
You'd probably take a picture and say, ha ha!
That wouldn't be me.
Exactly.
But anyway, the reason why I brought up carpooling is because there has been a study by the Center of Governance and Political Studies, also known as CentGPS.
Okay.
They surveyed 5,000 vehicles around the Klang Valley between 8 a.m. and 9:10 a.m., so peak hours, over 2 days, October 23rd and October 25th. And they excluded e-hailing taxis.
Okay.
And what they found out is that Malaysia has one of the highest rates of single person in a car.
Right.
So 87.3% of Klang Valley residents are alone in their vehicles compared to the United States, which is 66%, and Spain, which is 56%.
Right.
And when they dug a little bit deeper into the qualitative survey responses, a lot of them said that many drive alone because of comfort, listening to podcasts or music or, I suppose, singing in the car, right?
Right.
And a lot of them said, you don't have to lie on a passenger talking to you. It's early in the morning. You're stressed out.
You just want to get to work.
You just want to get to work.
Right.
Another bunch of people said that public transport is very difficult. And parking at park and ride services at LRT and MRT places is still about the same price as parking in your office building.
Actually, that's true because I've taken the LRT a few times and I've been unlucky enough to be lumped with a very expensive parking fee, which in the end of the whole game, I realized that I would have just spent a little bit more money if I'd driven there myself and driven back, and it was a lot of less hassle. But
yeah,
we try and, you know, adapt to the situation, but it doesn't seem to work in our favor. And also, again, like I said many times before, there are a lot of locations. For example, I live in PJ. I want to go to Monkera. I can't take public transport.
Is it possible?
I have to drive.
Yep, exactly. You and know? it's a very big issue, this one, especially with public transport. The other finding that they found was that the cheap cost of fuel and toll isn't exactly an incentive for carpooling or public transport.
Yes.
I think along with this survey, again, one of those famous tables and charts where, you know, it calculated fuel prices in Southeast Asia, and again, Malaysia is the lowest.
Right. So like we said a few weeks ago,
yeah,
and you heard it here first, take away
the
cheap
subsidies,
fuel prices. Take away the subsidies. I know a lot of Malaysians will hate me for it, but you learn to adapt. You learn to drive less unnecessarily,
yep,
and you learn to appreciate other things in life.
Yeah. But there is quite a problem with this, because you raise the fuel prices or you remove all the subsidies, and if the fuel prices start to balloon, our public transport can't exactly handle that, because like you said, you know, you live in PJ, how are you supposed to get to Monkera, or how am I supposed to get from Ambang to Glenmary in under an hour?
Exactly.
It's just impossible.
Exactly.
So
there will still be people who will drive, but they'll be a bit more careful. For example, you go on a Sunday to Monkera, for example.
Yeah.
You know the people who go hiking?
Yeah.
Okay, they've come there to exercise, but they'll park as close as possible to the hiking trail, yet they want to exercise. I always tell them, go and park in the open air car park, which is about, you know, a few hundred meters away, and then walk to the hiking trail and then go up.
Yeah.
Because you're there to exercise.
It's always a little bit ironic when you see all of these big, huge parks around KL, and then you see people double parking, triple parking at the side of the road. You're like,
you've killed the whole idea of exercising. But anyway, that's just my point of view, because I don't exercise.
Anyway, should we move to the car launches?
Please do.
So we have three and a half, actually. The first one we've extensively spoken is the Mazda CX-8. It's been officially launched.
Interesting prices.
Yep, four variants. It starts at 180,000 ringgit for the 2.5 petrol G version, the non-turbo with 192 horsepower and 258 newton meters of torque. That, surprisingly, they didn't put the turbo engine in that one.
Right.
The top line is 217,000 ringgit for the 2.2 diesel with all-wheel drive and 450 newton meters of torque. So it can pull all that heft along the way.
True.
It's a three-row SUV. It's a stretch CX-5, I guess.
It is. It looks like a stretch CX-5. It looks almost like a CX-9.
The top two lines come with all the safety kits, but no adaptive cruise control, which is kind of weird. And as you'll find out in our car review later, we'll be pitting it against one of its main rivals, the Hyundai Santa Fe.
Yes, and you see, the thing is, it's quite surprising, because when the Hyundai Santa Fe first came out a few months ago, it really had no rival in the market in terms of that segment. Because, I mean, yes, you have the Kia Sorento, but that's a little bit older already now. And, you know, the rest don't have something similar. But when Mazda launched this, we said, hey, very close. But what would the price be? Now, they're almost apple to apple across the range.
Exactly. I think Hyundai also has four variants.
Exactly.
But
has the Hyundai got better spec?
We'll have to find out
in
the review later on.
Yes.
But now, the next car launch that happened last week was the Mini Clubman S. It's the facelift version.
Facelift.
298,000 ringgit. That's quite a lot of money. The facelift sort of brings you the new 7-speed dual clutch transmission with a coasting function that they say if you're not, you know, if you're going on a downhill, the car will just shift
out of gear.
Yes. Yeah. Basically a nip and tuck. It comes with better trim, some new ambient lighting features, and the model that they showed us was actually something called the Mini Yours.
Mm.
Basically, it's a high-spec car.
No, what they're trying to say is, this Mini is yours, Arif. Take it home.
I admit, when I saw the car, I was pretty attracted to it.
Mm.
It's very weird. But yeah, the Mini Yours is apparently a high-spec car. It comes with Union Jack wheels, Union Jack rear lights, and Union Jacks on the seats as well.
Right.
There's a theme there. And it comes with a 12-speaker Harman Kardon sound system, which is
good. You can never go wrong with a Harman Kardon.
Yep.
And that's basically all the specs you'll see in a BMW 3 Series.
Exactly. 298,000, that's, what, 9 grand more than the 3 Series.
Exactly. So, it's, you know, whether you buy a nice-looking sport sedan or you buy this iconic car with almost the same amount of power.
Yep. At the event also, they launched the JCW models, the John Cooper Works. Yep.
Very tasty.
They launched the Clubman and the Countryman. So upgrades across the board are the 2-litre turbo comes with 306 horsepower.
Right.
Now is the most powerful Mini ever made.
Yes.
And it comes with an 8-speed conventional gearbox, right, which is, you know, you don't get dual clutch transmission on this? I guess not.
I think it's because of the power delivery.
Yeah.
You know, and Mini didn't want anything to go wrong because people are going to be trashing this car.
That's true. That's
Buyers
true.
Are not going to drive around sedately, you know?
That's true. The JCW kit gets you big brakes, big wheels, performance exhaust, and red John Cooper Works accents all around the car. So if you see a Mini with red accents everywhere, that's a John Cooper Works. Right. And that cost about 380,000 ringgit.
That's the thing. 380,000 ringgit is a lot of money for a Mini.
Exactly.
I'm not saying it's not worth it, but yeah, it seems like a lot of money because this is already plus 5 series money, yep, 4 series money.
Yeah, I mean, you top up 20 grand, you get a C43 AMG.
Well, you know, that's a different brand. I'm talking about, you know, yeah, from the same color. And remember, BMW owns Mini, BMW owns Rolls-Royce. Doesn't mean this is a Rolls-Royce.
As we spoke about last week.
Yes.
Right, the final car that was launched last week is the McLaren GT. 908,000 ringgit without tax.
And no options.
No options, yep.
Because you can tick all the options.
Basically a $2 million car.
Yep.
It's McLaren's first ever Grand Tourer, which was quite surprising, right, to me. And this is their first Grand Tourer. And they said that this GT redefines the Grand Touring car. So it comes with a lot more boot space and it's without all the access, such as like French seams and all that stuff. When I spoke to the managing director of Asia Pacific at McLaren, he said, like, you know, the Grand Tourers these days have gotten too big, too fat. So this one is more of a sports car with Grand Touring capabilities.
Yep.
612
and luggage space.
Yep, yep. 612 horsepower and 630 newton meters of torque. That propels you and your 570 litres of luggage space, aka two golf bags, and your partner in crime.
Interesting, eh?
Stay past 8:30 to listen to the interview I had with George Biggs, the managing director of Asia Pacific at McLaren, as we talk about that and more, and their brand new showroom here. But we should head to the break and then jump in on the review.
Yes, we should.
This has been Cruise Control. We'll be back. BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. This is Cruise Control with me, Arif Roos, and
Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my.
Just now, if you've missed the first part, we spoke a little bit about the news where Touch & Go said no more parking surcharges, and a little study by the Center for Governance and Political Studies, Cent GPS, and how they said carpooling isn't really for Malaysians. But now we have a review of the brand new Hyundai Santa Fe. This is a 2.4, the petrol, and is the premium version. So it's north of 210,000 ringgit, I think.
Yep, so 211,000.
Tell us more about it.
Okay, to start off with, the first time when they launched this car, we took it off-road. They had an off-road event. We really messed the car.
I remember we spoke about it. Yes. Bush Bashing Santa Fe was what it was called,
yes,
I think.
Yes, yes. And at the time, we also took the diesel out and we took the lower spec out. We took a few variants.
Yeah.
But we didn't get a full, what I call, live-in with the car.
Yeah.
So this time, we got the car for a few days. We got to live with it in KL. The first thing we noticed was, it's quite funny, eh? We got the car, we didn't feel it to be really that big. But when we tried to park it, it filled a car park space with just a few mm left and right for the doors to open, which can be a real squeeze when you have a pot belly like mine. But the thing is, this is how wide this car is. And being wide means rear seating, very comfortable for three adults. It's a really big car. You don't see it as a big car because why? It's got that whole cascading huge grill in front with the light sitting up nice and slim. So it gives an impression of the car being actually quite small.
Yeah.
You know, even when you see it on the road, you don't realize how big it is. It's only when you park it then you realize. And it's bigger than the old Santa Fe.
It's basically the same size as a Mazda CX-9.
Yes. Now, the old Hyundai Santa Fe looks big because it's tall.
Yep.
And it's long. But this car, I mean, they've just hidden the sheer heft. And it's got seven rows of seats. Seven rows. It's not a bus.
That's a bus.
Yeah. Three rows of seats. And the third row seat is pretty decent to get in and out. I can get in and out of it. You can actually, an adult like me can sit inside. But of course, you know, with my pot belly, I can't sit in there for a long term. But they're both full-size seats. They fold flat. So if you don't need them, you get a full-size boot space,
yeah.
A large boot space. Underneath, you get the spare tires and toolkit and everything else. So in terms of functionality as a family vehicle, spot on. Pocket, storage spaces, all over the thing. Moving the seats up and down. Even the middle row seat, you can recline it.
Yeah.
So if you want added comfort, you can recline it. You can bring it forward a bit so that you can get extra leg room or less leg room.
So the middle row is split sort of like three ways. The two at the side and the middle as well.
Exactly. And the lever function system is very easy to use. An aged person even can use it. It's not something really heavy and tiresome. Then you get, of course, a nice infotainment system. You've got all the safety features, too long to mention. Hyundai have done a good job in loading up. Hyundai Samdabi, they've loaded up all the safety systems in this. At the moment, the car is fully imported. The first batch of 100-plus units are completely sold out.
Yeah.
The best-selling model is the high-spec, surprisingly. The base model, they start at 189,000 ringgit. That is not the best-selling model. It's the high-spec at 211. And I think the reason is because more Malaysians say, I'd rather pay a little bit more and get all this loaded in. And they've got some interesting design features on the inside, which, you know, you'll see in the pictures at dsf.my. But now when you take the car out for a test drive, surprisingly, it's very smooth. NVH is great. It actually feels like a premium German SUV.
That's, I think, what a lot of people say about these new Hyundais and Kias,
yes,
especially.
Despite the fact that, you know, Hyundai has got not the most popular rating in Malaysia. The funny thing is, if you go to the countries around the region, if you go to Australia, you go to New Zealand, you go to Singapore, they sell like hotcakes. The Hyundai brand is highly acceptable in all these mature markets. But I'm surprised why in Malaysia, it doesn't have that same brand value. Maybe it's just the way the market is set up. The same goes for its sibling, Kia.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have the same brand value as if you go to Australia and New Zealand and Singapore. Of course, in US, it's one of the best-selling vehicles. If you go to US and if you check online, people actually compare the Santa Fe, this Santa Fe and even the old one, with the Mercedes-Benz GLC, the BMW X3 and the old X3.
Yeah.
You know, they're all compared with the Germans. They're not compared with the French or even Volvo. They are compared with the Germans.
And I suppose that's a marker of how far Hyundai has come, right?
Yes.
And especially when you said like all 100 units of this new Santa Fe were all sold as premium, the high-end models.
Yes.
It's a signifier of like, I think maybe people are starting to trust how it looks and how it feels.
Yes. I think that it's not the question of trust. It's not a question of after sales because they've got strong after sales. They've got the strongest warranty in the market. In Malaysia, they were the first to come up with a 5-year warranty,
yeah,
and the rest had to follow. But now nobody remembers that.
Yep.
They were the first to say, you know, we got high tensile steel in the body.
Yep.
And then now everyone says they got it. But they were the first to do a lot of things, but they're quickly forgotten, which is a normal Malaysian thing.
Yeah.
But generally, if you go and look at older Hyundais, maybe the resale values are not so good, but the cars are still solid. The cars are still running.
Yep.
Owners are not complaining that the cars are sitting by the side of the road. They're not sitting in some, you know, workshop, unrepaired, collecting dust, you know, rain and everything else. So overall, I think Malaysians should start giving Hyundai a little bit of credit. At least take it out for a test drive. Then immediately go and test drive the rivals on the same day. Then you'll realize that actually there's hardly any difference, but the price difference could be 100,000 ringgit.
So I want to talk about the engine because you say you've driven the base version, you've
yes,
driven the top line, which is a 2.2 diesel,
yes,
which I think suits this sort of car more because it has all the torque. But
right,
this 2.4 premium, petrol engine doesn't come with a lot of torque. It's not turbocharged. To me, it doesn't sound like it would deal with the weight.
Okay, I had no issue.
Yeah.
No issue driving in the city. I actually put 7 people in the car. 2 of them were kids. And we drove around. Acceleration is fine. 170 brake horsepower, 225 Newton meters. Doesn't sound like a lot. But actually, this car moves along very well. You see, you have an eco mode, which really alters the gearbox setting,
yeah,
to actually save fuel. Then you got normal mode. And then you got sports mode. Now, in eco mode, I could get approximately full tank of petrol, 630 kilometers.
That
out of
is
it.
Very, very good, especially for a 2.4.
Exactly. But yeah. Of course, we're not pushing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The moment I go into sports mode, I'm doing about 530. But that's still very good.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about something, I just explained how big it is. And also, you're really pushing it. Mm-hmm. Because when in sports mode, you know, the gear ratios are up. So on normal mode, you get about 550, 560.
Yeah.
All this is variable because people have different driving conditions. But end of the day, for a 7-seater, fully imported, for now it's fully imported, local assembly starts next year, prices might move a little bit. But for now, I think Hyundai have got a bestseller, which is underappreciated.
I think before we move into the inspection, I think, you know, in the local car launches, we mentioned the new Mazda CX-8.
Yep.
Priced extremely competitively against this Hyundai. What are your thoughts against that?
I love the new Mazdas. For the last 7 years, every new Mazda has come out, CX-5, CX-7, CX-9, even the sedans, they're all gorgeous, paint finish, everything. Mazda has moved their game up. I think they've even moved their game up to play with the Europeans. For them, Japanese are not my competitors, Koreans are not my competitors. Apple to apple with this vehicle, I think it's time that Malaysians stood up and said, do I really need something that says made in Germany, or do I need something that says made in Korea, made in Japan? Because why? The game is set at the same level.
So in terms of quality, they're almost
apple to apple.
Yeah.
In terms of features, they're apple to apple. I think it boils down now to one simple thing. When you talk about space, comfort, features, safety, technology, both of them are apple to apple, whether it's diesel or petrol. Seating comfort, material quality, soft touch panels. But now, it's whether you like the design of the Hyundai Santa Fe or the design of the Mazda. If you're someone who's drawn to the design of the Mazda, I can tell you 900 good things about the Hyundai, you will not agree with me.
Yeah.
You'll buy the Mazda. If you're drawn to the design of the Hyundai Santa Fe, I can tell you 2,000 good things about the Mazda. You will not be taken, because cars have come to a point where now, at this price range, or even slightly lower, they're all really good.
Yeah.
But design is what is attracting people. And the new generation of buyer, you guys, your age group, they're not thinking about resale value, they're not thinking about maintenance, because why? I got a strong warranty. Anything go wrong, I go and shout at the workshop. And then I want to keep the car for 5 years.
Yeah.
I don't worry about it after that. So in that demographic, the new buyer segment is all about design, to the point where they don't even need to test drive the car. You know, they see it online. They see it on dsf.my and they say, hey, shameless, I want this car.
Shameless plug there.
Nothing to do with what DSF has written, but I see all those nice pictures and hey, it's got some connectivity, it's got safety features.
I think also in terms of like the interior design, especially the Mazda is a bit more emotional. The Santa Fe is a bit more family friendly, you would say. You know, you just have to sit in one. You will instantly know which one you like better. That's just how cars are these days.
And you know, when people come and ask me, what do you think, what you should buy? I said, listen, don't take my word for it. I can give you the spec. I can give you the analysis. But final decision is shape. And you know, a lot of times, I won't mention the brands. I've told people, don't buy this certain vehicle. They'll come back with the one I said no. And you know what they always tell me? No, but it looks so nice. I mean, come on, Daniel. It looks so nice.
Shall we do the inspection then?
Why not?
So, first things first, who are its competitors?
Immediately, the CX-8. And now with that pricing, direct competitor.
What's good about it?
I would have to say the fuel economy impressed me for something this large, and the amount of space inside. It was really comfortable. It was really well put together.
It's a car designed for the US market, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
For big burger eaters.
What do you think is lacking?
At the moment, the only thing that I think it's lacking is the fact that Hyundai and also some of the other brands should talk to software developers and start putting more of the talkie-talkie in the dashboard. I mean, they have good infotainment, Apple CarPlay, Android, everything else. But, you know, the next generation of buyers, they want the talkie-talkie dashboard, which there's one brand that supplies it very well. But that's where it's gearing towards. And that has to come in the next 1 year. Like for Hyundai, they can go to Samsung and say, listen, I want you to work for my infotainment system. I want you to install a smart screen as such, which works like a handphone.
That's where the industry is going.
Yes,
that's where the car industry is going.
In fact, take away that center infotainment system and then sell the car with a Samsung smartphone and you just plug it in and use it. And then when you're finished, you just plug it out and put it in your pocket.
Yeah.
That way, easy. You don't have to worry about theft. Secondly, you got everything in your pocket.
Number four, in terms of build quality, how close is this Hyundai to the likes of Volvo?
Likes of Volvo? I think on par.
On par?
On par.
Yeah?
I would confidently say on par, yes.
Oh, that's great. Final question. If it was up to you, the new Mazda CX-8 or this Hyundai Santa Fe?
If I had to decide between the two, I would say... I really don't know.
You have to pick one.
I really don't know. I mean, I like both of them in their own simple way. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
I like the look of the Mazda CX-8.
Mm-hmm.
The exterior look.
Yeah.
But I love the interior of the Santa Fe.
If only there was a middle ground.
So, for example, if I'm spending more time looking at the car in my garage, CX-8, because I like the design. If I'm spending more time sitting in the car, the Santa Fe.
There you have it. It's not quite the definitive answer we have, but...
But it's good enough.
It's good enough. It's good enough. So, that was the review of the Hyundai Santa Fe. 2.4 Premium is the petrol version of the Hyundai Santa Fe. If you've missed any part of this show, don't forget you can download the podcast on bfm.my. Visit our Instagram page, at BFM Cruise Control. You can visit Daniel's website, dsf.my. Stay tuned for part 3 of this show, past 8:30, as we... Or as I, Arif Roos, will be speaking to the Managing Director of Asia Pacific at McLaren Automotive, Mr. George Biggs. I'll speak to him about the new McLaren GT, the brand new showroom in Glenmary, as well as, you know, a little bit about McLaren's identity and their future. So stay tuned. This has been Cruise Control on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.